It's 12:08 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live in exile from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, it's a big day here in L.A. because it's the first day for the new semester at LAUSD. And because of all the pushback against the fake doctor, students for the first time don't have to wear the mask.
It's got to feel like Christmas in August for the students of LAUSD.
Oh, it doesn't feel like Christmas at all. It's 105 degrees. I don't know who came up with this plan of starting the school year in the middle of August in the hottest month of the year, but enjoy it, kids.
When did that happen? I think we spent some time last week talking about this, but when I was an elementary school student, I remember after Labor Day, the Tuesday after Labor Day, we went back to school. And then all of a sudden, I woke up one morning and it's like, oh, no, you're not going back to school in September. You're going back to school in the middle of August.
Yeah, that happened to me, too. And I think what happened was there were somebody was complaining that you would start in September. You would have that 2-week break for Christmas and New Year's, and then you would finish the semester in January. And someone was arguing, well, everyone forgot what they learned over the Christmas break. So we want to break up those semesters with the Christmas break. And that's why students are sweating it out in August.
It's public school in California. Who's going to figure out, who's going to forget how to put a condom on a zucchini?
We demand higher pay.
It's a big day for you, Cecily.
Now, it's a big day for you, Randy. I heard that you got stuck in a little bit of traffic on the way to the radio station.
This is now the sixth time this has happened since this new administration took over in 2021. But I, at Sunset Boulevard on the 405, trying to get to Culver City, was completely stopped for 25 minutes because Kamala Harris has a home in Brentwood. And when she needs to go from Brentwood to LAX, they shut down the 405.
Okay, she and her husband are here all the time. She is from Oakland and San Francisco, the Bay Area. He lived here in Southern California. This is where his home is. I would imagine he's here by himself quite a bit, and she's not here with him. Sometimes they're here together. And whenever either one of them are here, they have this huge security presence all around them, and they do things like shut down roads, shut down freeways, and cause traffic to get crunched. If that man, I don't even know his name.
Doug.
If that, Doug?
Doug Emhoff.
Okay. If Doug was walking down Hollywood Boulevard at high noon, do you think anyone would recognize who he is?
Absolutely not.
No. Her boyfriends are far more identifiable than the husband.
You know, to make it even more insulting, the vice president and her husband weren't even here for official business. They were up in Oakland over the weekend. They stayed down here last night so they could get an early start to LAX to go to Hawaii for vacation.
You know, Randy, I'm doing a little summer reading now, and I'm reading the book, This Will Not Pass. It was written by two New York Times reporters about the 2020 presidential election. And oh boy, are there interesting tidbits about any number of bold-faced names in Washington, but especially Kamala Harris.
Oh, wasn't this the book where they're the ones that detailed that she wanted to sabotage Karen Bass?
Oh, she not only sabotaged Karen Bass, she hired an Oppo research firm out of San Francisco to sabotage all the others, too.
That is fantastic.
Susan Rice, Amy Klobuchar, all of them had horrific stories about them end up in the paper, and one by one, they all had to drop out of contention because they were damaged goods. And according to the book, at a certain point, they kept coming to the name Kamala Harris because she was the only one that didn't have negative stories about her in the press. And they figured out that she was the one that was kneecapping all of these people. One of them, Susan Rice, apparently confronted Kamala Harris about it. And Kamala Harris denied it and pretended like she didn't know anything about it.
She fights dirty.
Oh, yeah. And when they finally decided that she was the only option that they had for the vice presidency, One of the things that they made her do was they made her leave all her California people behind because Biden was afraid that at a certain point she would do the same thing to him, including her sister. They wouldn't let her sister work for her for that reason.
Well, remember what Leo Terrell said when Kamala got nominated as the VP.
Oh, she's going to be under the bed with an ice pick. And the one, and we called this, you and I called this from the very beginning, Randy, the one who was absolutely furious when they decided that it was going to be Kamala was Jill Biden.
John, that's Dr. Jill Biden to you.
That's true. I think she went to med school with a fake doctor. She couldn't believe the fact that they settled on Kamala Harris to be the vice president.
They picked somebody who not only was trying to call Joe Biden a racist during the primary, they picked somebody who dropped out of the primary because she was polling at 0%.
That's right.
The state they don't need to win. The state they're going to win default.
Here's another funny tidbit. When the Democratic primary process first started, they all met, all the Biden people met, and they talked about how ugly that race could have gotten or could get. And they were wrestling with the question, do they bring up Kamala Harris's relationship with Willie Brown? And they decided that it would be too bad of a look for him to bring that up because of the age differential and that sort of thing. So they decided that they wouldn't go in that direction. And the minute that they decided that, that's when she started comparing him to David Duke. And when she met with her people and they were trying to decide how nasty they were going to get with Biden, she was the one that said we should go pedal to the metal. And they said, now, wait a minute. If you do this to him, you better land the knockout punch, because if you don't, he's not going to pick you to be the vice president. And she said, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Meaning, I am absolutely ready to slit this man's throat, but if I don't slit his throat, we'll find a way to slit other people's throats to make sure that he has to pick me to be the VP. And that's exactly what she did.
You know, the more and more stories that I hear about our Vice President Kamala Harris, the more it makes sense that she delights in the fact that she has shut down the 405 countless times because she won't get rid of her house in Brentwood.
Here's another fun tidbit. We know that Eric Garcetti was one of the first ones to endorse Joe Biden when he announced that he was running for the presidency.
I receive things on both ends.
What I forgot was he was also the one, or one of four people, who got to pick who the vice president was going to be for Joe Biden.
That's right. He was on Biden's select committee.
That's right. And on that committee, he was the one that tried to screw over both Karen Beck.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
And Kamala Harris.
Who did he want?
He wanted Gina Raimondo, the governor of Rhode Island. And then when finally everyone else on the committee decided it was going to be Harris, when Garcetti turned it over to Biden, he said, okay, the committee has come back with a recommendation that you pick Kamala Harris. Pause, pause, pause. If you can trust her.
It's the most truthful thing that Eric Garcetti's ever said, but I do enjoy greatly that even that committee had no respect for Eric Garcetti.
Just be smart and stay apart.
When they told Karen Bass that it was Kamala Harris who kneecapped her, she refused to believe it, which was also interesting to me. They depict Karen Bass as being a genuinely nice person who gets stomped all over by literally everyone.
It's not a namsy-pamsy thing.
So we're in for a real treat if she ends up being the mayor and she's got a city council full of lunatics. What are you going to do? I'm only in four chapters, but Randy, this thing's great so far.
Sounds like you've got some great summer reading.
Oh, this is like the National Enquirer for politics. One other point on that before we move on. They spend a lot of time talking about the warden. And they describe the warden behind the scenes as being one of the most charming people in all of politics. And one of the people who he ended up charming, who he apparently has a very good relationship with when he's not on camera, is Donald Trump. Apparently, those two talk all the time. And whenever he needed something from Washington, he would call Trump. Sometimes Trump would call him apparently at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And Trump respected the fact that he was a former husband of Kimberly Guilfoyle, who is now married to Don Jr., which gives him validation that Kimberly Guilfoyle is a prize.
That's a weird Eskimo brother.
No kidding. But Trump also respects aesthetics. And the warden is a good-looking guy who presents well, and that always impressed Trump.
That's right. When Steve Bannon got hired, didn't he make him shave his beard?
He did. It's like working for Walt Disney.
And that's why I would never hire Chris Christie, because he was too sloppy.
Exactly. But that contributed to Gavin Newsom and Donald Trump having a very, very good private relationship, which kind of shocked me. Although now that you kind of look at it, you say to yourself, okay, I understand that.
Well, and I've seen Gavin in interviews, and he's talked about this, where obviously publicly throughout the entire presidency, he was full on anti-Trump, but he knew to say the right things because flattery gets you everywhere with that guy.
Oh, he would kiss his ass behind the scenes like you would not believe. And he knew exactly how to do it. He knew all of the trigger points to get what you wanted from Trump. And behind the scenes, on the phone, he would hit every single one of them. And then he'd go on TV and kill him. But Trump always thought that that was admirable. Trump always got a kick out of that.
I do like that he's so charming in private, but in public, he sounds like a robot.
That is something we are mindful of.
Why can't we get the Gavin in private?
That one probably had a couple bottles of Plump Jack in him.
He did get out of rehab, didn't he?
Well, that was a long time ago.
That's true.
He was a different man sleeping with a different campaign manager's wife.
It's an interesting book. The book is called This Will Not Pass. I'm four chapters in. If I come across any other interesting notes, I will definitely pass it along to you. So, as we mentioned before, today is the first day back to school for LAUSD students, which means the relatively new superintendent of LAUSD did the media rounds.
He went on the Sunday shows, including Face the Nation on CBS.
And how did that go for him?
Not great. Because he is the superintendent of, well, a lot of this happened before his tenure, a school district that has failing grades, failing enrollment, and a teachers union that's out of control.
Thanks to who?
Well, that's due to our favorite lady, Cecily Meyer Cruz.
Our learning spaces are special places.
In fact, we told you last week that the teachers union is already going to war with Carvello and LAUSD because they want to add 4 extra instruction days to make up for learning loss. And Cecily says that's not a thing.
But let us keep it real.
How does that jive with the equity?
Well, it's not very equitable at all to see what LAUSD and UTLA did to the students of LAUSD during the pandemic. But she said you don't need to know your times tables because people knew how to riot.
Everyone is having all of the feels.
Let's listen to the superintendent on teacher shortages.
It's back to school time, and districts nationwide are dealing with a serious teacher shortage. But it's hard to know exactly how many classrooms are teacher-less due to gaps in data from state to state. Alberto Carvalho is the superintendent of the second largest school district in the country, Los Angeles, and he joins us this morning. Good morning to you.
By the way, fun fact, who do you think makes more money, the superintendent of LAUSD or the fake doctor?
Oh, it has to be the fake doctor.
I think our Carvalho makes 400 grand. Fake doctor makes 650.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics says there are 300,000 fewer public school teachers than there were before the pandemic. These were numbers current in June. Do you know why so many teachers are leaving the classroom?
Well, good morning, number one. I believe we do. Number one, there are...
No, you can't say number one twice.
No. There's only one number one. There's not two number ones. There's a number one and a number two.
Number one, good morning. Number two, let me tell you the problem.
Well, good morning, number one. I believe we do. Number one.
Wait, does he think that that's her name?
Well, I don't know if you saw this, but there was a time that then Vice President George H.W. Bush was traveling in India, and he was on Nightline with Ted Koppel, and he was about five cocktails into the evening, and every time he...
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
Referred to Ted Koppel, he referred to him by a different name.
That's just what happens now on the Sunday shows. I can't tell you the amount of times I've seen a politician interviewed on Jake Tapper and they call him Chuck the entire time.
Well, good morning, number one. I believe we do. Number one.
That's just number one on the list. Number one was Face the Nation. Number two was John Carl.
Well, good morning, number one. I believe we do. Number one, there are economic conditions that have made it difficult for teachers to be recruited into the classroom, insufficient pay.
Insufficient pay?
We demand higher pay.
And he was starting out on such a great note by coming out publicly against the fake doctor's mask mandate. I had high hopes for him, and now he's saying we need to pay the teachers more?
He was also the leading force behind the LA City Council finally trying to do something to ban the bums from being outside of schools, but... Got to take another look at Carvalho here.
Critical hardship. The pandemic did not help. Certainly the over 2 years that teachers endured during virtual learning and then back to school.
Wait, the teachers were the ones who had to endure the virtual learning?
They got to do their classroom instruction in their pajamas.
And according to the teachers union, that's what they were fighting for, especially at LAUSD, longer than any other school district in the entire country.
That is fantastic.
Despite the fact that they got the shot first, they were prioritized over other professions.
Over 2 years that teachers endured during virtual learning and then back to school with extreme conditions faced by many, certainly had a chilling effect on many. And as a result of that, a disproportionate number of teachers across the country decided to retire before accruing full benefits. That's truly unprecedented in America's history.
So the reason there's a teacher shortage is we're not giving them enough money and they don't get to work from home anymore?
Well, let me throw this spaghetti at the wall here. One of the things that happened when these kids were stuck inside for a year and a half, 2 years, doing nothing but playing video games, not going to school, not participating in sports, not being able to go to the movies or go to the beach or do normal things that kids do, is they turned into weirdos. And parents understand that the kids turned into weirdos, which is why they wanted the schools to be open. The teachers had two minds. They wanted to stay at home as long as possible, but they also wanted to come back to a normal teaching experience. Unfortunately, you can't have both. So because the kids stayed at home for a year and a half and became weirdos, when everyone went back to school, the teachers had a nightmare on their hands. And a lot of them just threw up their hands and said, I'll go do something else.
But let us keep it real.
Just got an invitation to be part of CNN's election night coverage tomorrow. I guess Liz Cheney is on the ballot in Wyoming, Randy?
That's right. It's the big old Wyoming primary, and it's the first time that Wyoming has ever been the focus of a primary election.
I don't know if I'm going to do this. I'm going to go on and I'm going to say something that's going to get me kicked off that internet. And I can't have that happen because I'm way too dependent on it for too many things. We'll see.
Well, maybe you'll get lucky and all the hate will go towards the other John Phillips.
That's true. We can kick him off the internet. 800-222-KABC is the phone number, 1-800-222-5222. The superintendent of LAUSD His name is Alberto Carvalho, correct, Randy?
That's right. Alberto Carvalho made a name for himself in Miami, came to take over the job at LAUSD in the middle of last year. This is the beginning of his first full term, full semester as superintendent at LAUSD.
And they touched on many subjects over on CBS Face the Nation as the kids go back to school. One of the subjects was unqualified teachers.
Well, a member of your staff told us that out in L.A. to mitigate the shortage, you're giving out incentives, grants, but also something called alternative certification programs where teachers can go into the classroom before they've fully completed their own credentialing and their field work. You've also hired instructors on provision and intern permits. That sounds like you're lowering standards.
Oh, boy. I don't think he was expecting this.
No, he wasn't.
He was going to hear, so tell us how all the kids are excited for Monday. But no, Face the Nation ain't doing that.
We're really not. I mean, these are fully credentialed individuals. They have.
No, they're not. They're not fully credentialed. That's literally what the story is.
We're really not. I mean, these are fully credentialed individuals. They have a bachelor's or a master's degree. They may not yet have the state certification, but they have the course content already done. They may be missing a specific exam. But look, we are for the very first.
What if they started doing this with the pilot shortage?
Oh, can you imagine? I think they used to do that until they had that Colgan airplane crash, and then they stopped doing it real fast.
You know, and instead of 10,000 hours, we're going to lower that down to 500 hours.
We are for the very first time in over a decade fully staffed going into August 15th, the very first day of school. We were able to hire in excess of 1,500 teachers during the summer months. We partnered with colleges and universities. We cast a wide net for recruitment. We offered incentives. And last but not least, we, as you correctly said, embraced this concept of micro-credentialing to accelerate the hiring of qualified teachers for our students.
Okay, this is one where I'll cut the guy some slack. One of the things that you have happen in a heavily unionized workforce is they come up with specific credentials that you need to have to be able to join the union and become part of the profession. Anything that requires a license is similar to this. If you want to become a beautician, you need a beautician's license. You want to become a lawyer, you got to pass the bar. You have to have a bar card. You want to be a doctor, you need to be credentialed. And part of the reason that they do that is so they can unionize, have collective bargaining, that sort of thing. You don't really need to pass the CBEST and jump through all the teachers' unions' hoops to be a good educator. For example, Bill Gates is not qualified to teach science or math in California public schools because he hasn't passed the CBEST and he doesn't have a California teaching credential. Now, is Bill Gates qualified to teach math and science? Absolutely. But in the eyes of Cecily Meyart Cruz, he's not. And they do that because it helps them out from a labor perspective. So on this one, I'll give the guy a pass. Now, one of the questions where I won't give him a pass is, how the hell is more money going to solve all of your problems?
Well, Cecily?
We demand higher pay.
The average pay, according to the National Education Association, in your district for a teacher is $87,000.
I should have been a teacher.
No, you should have been a fake doctor. There's more money there.
Is the issue really pay? And given at the federal level...
Wait, I got to do something here just to entertain myself.
Is the issue really pay?
We demand higher pay.
Is the issue really pay?
We demand higher pay.
Sorry, I just had to do that.
And given at the federal level that so much emergency funding has been pumped in, I think it's $2.5 billion just from that spring rescue package, why isn't the incentive enough to solve this problem on a national scale?
Now, there's an interesting question. We're spending more money on the schools than we ever have before, including all that COVID relief money, which most districts have just sat on. So why isn't that being used?
Well, number one, the incentives are positive.
Wait, he's doing numbers again?
I think he thinks that that's her name.
You know, that's just a tick that certain people have where they do lists. He must be one of those people.
Yeah, Biden's one of those.
Oh, yes.
Although he usually skips one. Number one, number three, number 17.
Maybe his math teacher wasn't credentialed.
Well, number one, the incentives are positive. However, you need to have a pipeline of eligible candidates to fill these positions. And what we've seen is, number one, there are
Wait, get it again?
This might be the weirdest surprising tick that I've ever happened upon with somebody, because we don't know Carvalho that well. He's new to the scene. He just keeps number one-ing all over the place. Which
this is his, quite frankly.
His number one, it's actually very reflective of LAUSD, because number one is how a lot of those schools smell like.
Well, number one, the incentives are positive. However, you need to have a pipeline of eligible candidates to fill these positions. And what we've seen is, number one, there are insufficient candidates graduating from colleges of education nationally, particularly teachers with a certification with students with disabilities, elementary age students as well. So the pay is important. Working conditions are important. Health benefits packages are important. I can tell you one thing, considering the cost of living in Los Angeles, considering the cost of housing in Los Angeles, it is difficult to recruit individuals into our community. Nonetheless, for the very first time in over a decade, every single student in every single classroom in Los Angeles Unified will have a credentialed teacher on day one. That's truly stunning.
Okay, so if what's going on is he's losing teachers to suburban school districts or rural school districts because teachers don't want to teach in Los Angeles, let's explore that. In Newport Beach, they don't have homeless encampments right up against the fence of the schools. You don't have to worry about having your catalytic converter stolen off your car while you're teaching school during the day. You don't have to be worried about being hit on the back of the head and robbed for your cell phone and wallet when you're leaving campus at night. Those things don't tend to happen in many suburban districts because the city councils in those areas simply won't put up with it. In Los Angeles, they are willing to put up with that. When you combine that with the high cost of living, with traffic and all of these road diets that we keep imposing on our city streets that make traffic worse, yeah, it's going to be very hard to get teachers to teach in LAUSD over Newport Beach or Fullerton or Long Beach or other parts of Southern California. When you have a lot of demand for labor and you have a tight labor market, you have to compete with other districts to get people to want to teach in your district. And if all you have are problems and you're unwilling to do anything about those problems, you're going to lose out to other districts. The other districts are going to get their pick and you're going to end up with whatever's left over. That's just how it works. And I understand that if you're the superintendent of LAUSD, you don't have the power of the mayor or the power of the council or even the power of the school board. But you have a very important voice. And you used it a couple of times. You used it going after the city council, telling them to get rid of the homeless encampments near the schools. And you went after the fake doctor about the mask mandates. But maybe you need to get a little more aggressive about that. Maybe you need to get in front of these issues a little bit better. Maybe your voice needs to get a little bit louder so that not only are you on the record taking the right position, but people are aware that you're taking the right position and they say, I want to go work for that guy because that guy has my back and that guy cares about the education of the kids in LAUSD and that guy is going to make that district better.
I could see him coming on this show and telling us, number one, I'm taking care of the homeless, and number one, I am taking care of the mask mandate.
I wouldn't expect anything less. Going through the sound of LAUSD Superintendent Alberto Carvalho, who appeared on CBS News' Face the Nation over the weekend. Here he is on the number of students who are choosing to leave LAUSD.
By the way, since I cannot for the life of me remember the name of the host of Face the Nation, I will now be calling her number one.
About 10 to 20,000 students, you've said, are not enrolled in school or have stopped attending. Where are these kids going?
Well, that's been the question that the country has been asking. We know as a result of the pandemic, many parents decided not to enroll kids, particularly youngest kids, kindergarten and pre-K kids in schools.
Why would that be, I wonder?
Gee, is there something that has happened in the last 2 years?
Our learning spaces are special places.
Secondly, in...
Wait, there was number one!
All we heard was number one. And then when he forgets to tell us number one, he starts with number two.
Well, number one...
I don't know why, but that's going to be a drop.
Well, number one.
So there's his number one. Now we can move on to number two.
Secondly, in communities like Los Angeles or Miami, where you have a significant percentage of students who are immigrants or children of immigrants as a result of the pandemic and worsening economic conditions, they may have left the community or the country. So we have the loss.
Wait, they went back to Mexico?
Is that what he's alleging?
Saying they left the country, they went back there. Which is pretty dangerous right now. I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, especially if you're going anywhere near Tijuana.
So we have the lost children of Los Angeles. There are lost children in Miami, New York, every single large urban center. That is why this past week we scoured the community, we did knocks on doors, and we are bringing kids back into our school system.
It's an important story, Superintendent. We will stay on it. Thank you. We'll be right back.
Number one, there you have it.
Well, number one.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.